half a century, a century into the future about how we need people to get around, how people are going to be using our system, and I need to know how these projects address that, because you're solving a problem that we can't afford to continue to support and facilitate.
Appreciate the comment.
Ms. Pudgy, do you want to respond to this? I see your cards up. Or is that, do you have a separate comment?
No, I'd be happy to respond.
Okay.
And add a little more context.
And speak loudly.
Sure. Commissioner Daly, I really appreciate your comments. I'm a parent of a young child, and I am super concerned about her future as well as the future of our planet. And part of the challenge, I think, about coming and doing a presentation here is that we do a presentation on one specific topic. We could and would be happy to come back and talk to you about our active transportation needs inventory. We will be back to talk again about congestion pricing, about the work that we're doing on safety improvements on corridors throughout the Portland region. And all of these things are part of a multi-pronged attack on how we can manage our system most effectively, how we can preserve what we have and maintain the system that we have, and how we can think about how to move people more safely. These corridors are used and travel near and through many communities of color and low-income communities in the region. There will be a travel benefit to those communities as well as other users of the system. And I think keeping that whole perspective in mind, similar to how we created the RTP, of thinking we're going to try to do, think about climate, we're going to think about congestion, we're going to think about equity. These types of projects are part of that solution. They're not the only solution. They're not going to solve all of the problems. But they are a piece of the puzzle as we move forward that we need to consider. The region is going to continue to grow, and we're in agreement with the principles of the RTP that you can't keep building and building your way out of congestion. But we do need to continue to provide for a way for goods and services and people to be able to move, which is why we move forward with transit options, as well as ways to mitigate bottlenecks and congestion, and really aggressively pursuing things like industrial pricing.
I guess it's just concerning to me that the focus continues to be on expanding freeways and auxiliary lanes. I mean, that's what we're hearing from ODOT over and over again, and I think Portland has made it pretty clear that we have different priorities, and I understand that you came here to present on one item today, but there was nothing that precluded you from looking at other corridors that weren't freeways. You don't have funding attached to this. You're not, I mean, this is your opportunity to show us what your priorities are, and this is me, the priority is not.
We weren't asked to come here and talk about our priorities. We were asked to come here to do this work, to share the study that we have been doing, and so that's what we did. We wanted to provide the report isn't even done. I mean, we're here to say we analyzed bottlenecks on the freeway. It was a very narrow scope of work of the study. And we're here to share what we found in terms of where the bottlenecks are and some ideas for how we could address those bottlenecks. At this point, we have concepts on the table.
Let's go to Commissioner Megan Peters. I apologize. We have this meeting has a hard stop at 9 a.m., so I'll move the agenda forward. So please.
Yeah, thank you. So I appreciate the presentation and realize that it is limited in scope, but when you talk about the potential, options for dealing with bottlenecks, I wonder how the congestion pricing conversation factored into this study, or how it will factor into the next steps where we now have this information and we have some proposals about really adding lanes to freeways, but how the information that, or the work that ODOT is also doing on congestion pricing and the impacts that could have on our region and into this work or how it's going to factor into the next stage of considerations for OPEB.
Commissioner Stacey, Councilor Stacey, excuse me.
Thank you, Chair Craddock. I'll try to speak loudly enough so I don't have to stand. My back's a little quirky as well. I greatly appreciate Commissioner Udaly's comments. They eclipse mine, but they get right to the heart of the question. I was here for CBOS 1 in 2013. I raised strong concerns, even though I was a brand new member of the council, about the potential for CBOS to be a freeway widening process that is incompatible with and violative of the regional transportation plan's declaration and policy that throughways not exceed 3 lanes in each direction. That doesn't speak to the clear issues in the 217 corridor, which is a 4-lane expressway, 2 in each direction. These CBOS projects in the 217 corridor to some extent essentially emulate or make progress toward establishing a 6-lane profile, and I know that is ODOT's and the Washington County community's objective. That would not be violative of the RTP, but the RTP is a regionally accomplished agreement about how we're going to manage this component of our transportation system, throughways, expressways, freeways, so that they don't overwhelm the rest of the transportation network or divert resources, ridership from other modes in a spiraling growth of automobile-dependent commuting and transportation that undercuts our climate objectives around transit, biking, and walking, our livability objectives about how our neighborhoods function amidst through traffic. Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Vega Peterson, and I represent the neighborhoods on either side of I-205 from Gateway to the Clackamas County line. I'm not a frequent user of the expressway system, but I had the opportunity to use 205 many times this past weekend to visit a loved one in the hospital. And that is a dangerous facility, full or empty, in its current configuration. It is dangerous because of high-speed motorized activity, high-speed lane changing, folks doing this who have to travel enormous distances in many cases and are relying on that freeway network to get them to jobs. That growth path, pushing people to the outside, way outside of our urban growth boundary, is part of our problem as a region. It impacts our transportation system. It impacts livability for all of us. It punishes poor people. My neighborhood in inner southeast Portland is culpable in preventing city-initiated changes to make it possible for more people to live in inner southeast Portland. We need to do something about that. But what I humbly ask today is that ODOT no longer come back to us with updates about an operational process they call CBOS. This is freeway widening. It is, as Mr. Tonai said, an effort to forestall massive freeway expansion, which would otherwise be necessary. We don't want that massive freeway expansion. So I propose that we ask the Oregon Transportation Commission to no longer come forward with operational analyses and expansions of this kind, but to enter into discussions with JPACT about what changes may be necessary to our regional transportation plan, what's wrong or right about how we implement our growth management strategy, but no longer pretend that we're not widening freeways when we call it CBOS. Widening freeways is the wrong approach to our climate problems. It's the wrong approach to making livable neighborhoods that are economically integrated. We got to do a better job than this. I'm not pointing a finger at ODOT, but I am suggesting it's time for a rational and frank discussion about how far we can take the freeway model in this metropolitan area and accomplish our other objectives and make sure that we're not building 4-lane throughways on portions of 205 in direct contravention of the three-lane maximum in the RTP. That's my policy statement. It's not a question.
Thank you. We're running. Today is the day, we don't have a lot of time. So, Commissioner Savas, if you could be quick, please. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't have a question, but I do. I have a comment. So for someone who went to school and grew up in a very smoggy area, had days in which we were forced to stay inside and couldn't exercise because the air quality is so horrible, for someone who basically has committed my industry, my business, towards air quality and improving air quality in the technical side as far as emission control devices and so forth, it was not for technology. The air would not be what it is today. It'd be far worse than it is today. And I think that we need to foresee and be at least understand that the future, I foresee a time where a tremendous amount, if not all the vehicles on the highway, are electric. Some auto manufacturers, even truck manufacturers, are already making conversions away from combustion engines into electric vehicles. No matter what, these are interstates. If we want to provide locally in the metro region, we want to provide different modes of transportation or encourage people to use different modes, we need to provide those alternatives to the entire region. 70% of the people that work of Clackamas County that go to work leave the county every day. Okay, so there needs to be modes. If you want to reduce congestion, if you want to reduce all these factors, you need to provide alternatives, not just in Portland, but in the entire commute shed. And the problem is that the alternatives don't exist like they do in Portland and Clackamas County. We need to put those alternatives everywhere, not just in Portland.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to ask Margie to talk about next steps, and then we're going to go back to the consent agenda.
Yes, speaking of the consent agenda, so right now, just so everybody understands, this is still in the planning and analysis phase. There's been a request for a TIF amendment. The ordinance for the TIP amendment will go to next TPAC in November, and then at the December JPAC, you'll be voting on a TIP amendment to program the funds to do further planning and analysis on this. So just want to let everybody know that there's a process for this. Okay. Speaking of, I think we need to go back to the consent agenda on the TIP.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'd like to go back up to the top of the consent agenda. There are two items that we need to approve. First one is resolution number 195037 for the purpose of adding or amending existing projects for the 2018-2021 Metropolitan Transportation Improvement Program involving four projects impacting Portland, TriMet, Tualatin, and Washington County. The second item is approving the minutes of the September 19, 2019 JCAP.
Move for approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
Okay.
Move for approval.
Thank you.
Bingo.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. The consent agenda is approved. Thank you. So now we're going to drop down to the Regional Council Funds Allocation Update, Dan Kemp from Metro. And I don't know, Dan, if you are able to stand up, it should help.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. Can everybody hear me in the back there? Okay, great. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Dan Kemp. I'm a transportation planner here at Metro, and I'm the project manager for the Regional Flexible Funds Allocation. And we have slides. All right. So we're in the final phase of the Regional Flexible Funds Allocation process, and we're on track to wrap that up by the end of this year. I've had the pleasure of attending the County Coordinating Committee meetings this week and listened to the discussions that are happening there about local prioritization of projects. So I know you're all working really hard to help us get to the end of this process and put together a good package of projects. Today I just want to give you a quick overview of where we're at in the process. We'll just go over the policy direction that has been established real briefly and talk about the four primary areas of input that are available to decision makers, and then talk a bit about how we'll bring that back to you in the next couple of months as we're looking at the potential packages of projects to fund with the flexible funds. So you'll recall back in April, this was the policy direction that was adopted for these regional flexible funds. We focus on the four RTP investment priorities of equity, safety, climate, and congestion, and we use those to evaluate each project's performance in a technical ranking. There are two project funding categories. One, active transportation. That's 75% of the available funding. And then the other one is freight. The remaining 25% of the funds are targeted towards projects that help move freight more easily through the region. Applicants had the ability to apply for funding in one or both of these categories and have their project considered for funding in either category. So that's created some new dynamics in the process this year that I'll touch on in just a minute. And then the policy direction also includes a number of additional objectives that apply to the whole allocation package. And just to kind of touch on some of the key ones there, one is making investments throughout the region. There are transportation needs in every part of the region here, so one of the things that we're really striving to do is to make sure we're trying to address needs throughout the region with this funding. Other items in that list of allocation objectives that's in your staff report, concern with making sure we're looking at project delivery risks with clear eyes and understand what we're getting into when we're funding certain projects, making sure we have enough projects that adequately use up our CMAQ pot of funds, and then looking at making sure we're leveraging other investments or other transportation projects in the region with these funds and looking for projects that achieve multiple outcomes. So we covered this last month, but just to give you another quick hit on this, the investment priorities and the technical analysis that was conducted around these four areas was completed earlier. We covered that last month, but it really looks at how projects perform in these four policy areas. It's important to note that none of the policy areas are weighted or prioritized per the policy that was adopted earlier. We've completed the risk assessment report, and that was in your materials. It was sent out a little bit later today, and there should be hard copies in your materials. But this really looks at what's the relative degree of risk with each project to delivering each project on time within budget and for the scope that was applied for. And the intent with this step is to really improve our overall regional funding obligation and project delivery outcomes. There's a couple of ways that risk assessment information can be used. One way is to look at identify issues within projects that need to be addressed when we're putting together the final scope and funding agreements. Another way to use that information is to look at a project and say, well, let's just fund only the project development phase of that project right now, get some of these issues a little bit more fleshed out, and then move on to the construction phase. It's important to note that this is not intended to disqualify a project necessarily, but just enable us to have a better understanding of really what issues are associated with funding that project. The risk assessment report is marked draft, you'll note. We've asked the applicants to provide any responses they want to that information in the risk assessment prior to your meeting next month, so you'll have a better understanding of how applicants intend to respond to the risk assessment. We've also just finalized the public comment report. We had nearly 2,900 responses to our online survey, plus quite a number of letters and emails. We had 13 people join us here back in September for a public hearing to testify on the project. The public comment report contains a summary sheet similar to this one that kind of gives you an overview of the responses that we got for each of the projects. So coming up in the October-November months, we've asked the county coordinating committees and the city of Portland to indicate which projects they consider to be their priorities for funding. It's really important to know that both the coordinating committee prioritization as well as the public comment, they're really important because they help to capture and illustrate project benefits and attributes that may not be necessarily captured in the technical analysis of the project. So it really helps us understand the full benefits and the outcomes of these projects So when we're putting together a final package of projects, we consider all of that information as well. So this just kind of gives you a quick illustration of how these pieces of information work together with the allocation objectives to help TPAC put together a recommendation and for your approval and for council to adopt next January. So just briefly, we presented information to TPAC earlier this month. And in the discussion that ensued, they requested that we put together a number of project package options for them to discuss in November and to develop a final recommendation to you in their December meeting. And a couple of the key questions that they asked staff to consider was to look at ways to fund all the projects that applied for funding in the freight category, and then take a look at one of the Multnomah County projects that applied in for funding in either category and look at what funding one of those projects would look like. Another idea that was also presented that we're looking at is to look for other projects that didn't necessarily apply in the freight category, but they are on parts of the freight network. Would some of those be eligible for the freight funding as well? The issue here, just briefly, is that we only receive enough projects to use up a portion of the freight funding in the category, so we're looking at ways to fully utilize that funding as well. And we've heard questions about, you know, how this information will be illustrated and brought back to you. So I've put together just kind of a quick illustration that'll show a matrix that we'll bring back to you, that will show the project, its technical rating, its risk level, the indication of county coordinating committee prioritization, a public comment summary, and then also checking the box of whether or not it's CMAQ eligible or not, so we can understand if we're fulfilling our obligations to use our CMAQ funding on projects that are actually eligible for the funding. So these are the next steps. We will be back to you next month to give you a briefing on the TPAC discussion earlier in November. And then in December, we will be considering and asking you to approve a recommended package of projects that will then go to Metro Council in January for their action. So that's all I had for you today. I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
I just want to note, it doesn't look like the public comment report made it to the printouts in your packet. I believe it's online.
It's online.
It's
yes.
Online, but it's not in your printouts.
It's close to 100 pages, so yes. I didn't.
Okay, so comments, questions. Councilor Eccles.
Thank you, Chair Prouty. Dan, I'm going to ask the same question I asked you on Monday when you came back to Multnomah County. One of the projects, or the project from Gresham, is this Division Street project, and it's to complete sidewalks, pedestrian, active transportation on Division. And one of the concerns that we have is that its rating really doesn't reflect, in our view, the future concern about that. So we talked about it, and maybe you can respond to it, is that pedestrians don't use that area because it's not safe. And so you're kind of trying to prove the negative. With bus rapid transit coming out that way and new bus stops, it's going to be a very active area, and it's going to be counterintuitive to not have that area improved so that people can access safely bus rapid transit. So I'm just wondering, and again, we talked about it on Monday, but I wanted to have the conversation here. How does this group look at that, those types of, maybe there's true in other regions or in other proposals as well. How do you look at what the data doesn't show?
Right. That's why the County Coordinating Committee input is so important in this process, because it brings out those types of issues that you just described that aren't necessarily captured or were included in the application and in the technical ratings. So that'll be a part of the discussion that will be had at TPAC and JPAC in the next couple of months, is how do you bring in those additional project elements and consider that when you're looking at a package of projects.
Okay. And then just one other comment, Chair Craddock. I noticed on the November 21st agenda, we've allowed 20 minutes for this conversation. That seems, for such an important thing for us to be working on, it doesn't seem sufficient.
I know we're looking for approving a work plan on the mobility policy. I don't know what we're talking about around Frog Ferry. I don't even know where that is.
That, and that's actually changed from where we're moving that in. So.
Okay. So, yeah, I, you know, if others agree, I think that if we have time, we should probably allocate it to this conversation, this once every 3 years opportunity. We should really have a good, robust conversation.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Wow, everybody's left, and there's no cards left. Okay. So, Dan, thank you. Is there anything you wanted to say?
No. Okay. We'll see you next month.
So we'll have discussion in November and we'll make a decision in December. We'll make a recommendation to the Metro Council. Okay. So we're going to move on now to the regional mobility policy update of Kim Ellis, an introduction to the draft work plan.
Great. Thank you, Chair Craddock. So I also would like to reintroduce Levine Rockman. So I'm Kim Ellis. I'm the project manager for the regional mobility policy update for Metro, and Levine is the project manager for ODOT on this. And just as a reminder, this is a joint effort of both Metro and ODOT that came out of the regional transportation plan. So in your packet is a draft work plan and engagement plan that we've developed. It's undergoing review by TPAC, and they will be making their recommendation to you at their next meeting in early November, and we'll be coming back to you to seek your recommendation and to approve the work plan for council consideration so that staff can begin the work. So I'm going to spend a few minutes today just giving an overview of where we are and what's in those materials and have some time for you to provide any initial comments that you have on the objectives or overall approach, or if you have questions about where we're going. Just as a reminder, this is updating the policy for how we define and measure mobility for our transportation system. The mobility policy as it exists today is a volume to capacity ratio that's in the plan. It's in both the regional transportation plan, but also for the Portland area, there's a Table 7 in the Oregon Highway Plan and Policy 1F that applies to state-owned facilities. So an outcome of this effort will be recommending amendments to both the regional transportation plan as well as the Oregon Highway Plan for the Portland area. And as we discussed at the last briefing, there are several reasons why this work is important to do now. We were not able to demonstrate that we met the current policy as part of the update to the regional transportation plan adopted last year. And as the region continues to grow, the transportation system continues to be more and more full. It's increasingly difficult, not just at the regional level, but also for cities and counties to meet that current policy. This is particularly true in growing areas, concept plan areas where local governments are bringing forward plan amendments to basically bring land online to accommodate some of that future growth and to be able to demonstrate meeting that policy. And out of the RTP process, we also recognize, JPAC and the Metro Council recognize, that it's really important that we're aligning the mobility policy with the broader set of goals and values expressed in the regional transportation plan around climate, safety, equity, as well as goals that have been identified in local and state plans. This work is really attempting to continue to shift our focus from vehicles to a more multimodal transportation system that's focused on people and goods movement, and recognize that we can't afford, in all of the conversation earlier today, we can't afford to build our way out of congestion, so we need to find ways to meet our mobility needs that aren't just focused on vehicles for a variety of reasons. These illustrate the current uses of the mobility policy, so it really ranges from system plan level to those plan amendments, so comprehensive plan amendments that local governments do, but it's also used to require developers to either provide improvements or money to help mitigate the impact of land development. It's also used in managing and designing projects on the system, This project is really focused on the blue and the green, but we anticipate considering the implications for those gray areas and making recommendations about how those things can be in sync because they aren't used the same across all of those different uses. This is the timeline that's laid out in the work plan. That's in your packet. We're in the scoping phase, so we're still very early figuring out what and how we will be doing this work, but we want to complete it by fall of 2021 so that we are able to use and apply the new policy in the next update to the Regional Transportation Plan, which will be beginning its scoping phase at that time. I think this is also, so this will be something that JPAC and the Metro Council will be making recommendations on, as well as forwarding those recommendations to the Oregon Transportation Commission. They have responsibility for the state-owned facilities in our region, and so in order for us to implement that policy for state-owned facilities, they will also need to approve that work. This is just showing what I highlighted. This is one step in many pieces that will go into the future to implement the policy, but we do expect to make recommendations for how it gets implemented at the regional, state, and local level, and there may be other related ordinances, best practices, guidelines, standards that will need to be updated at the state and local level as well. This work will provide recommendations about what kinds of actions would be needed following approval of a new policy. So as part of the scoping phase, we have completed a number of different engagement activities. We are preparing a final report of the stakeholder interviews that should be available next week, and as well as a scoping report of all of the activities beyond the stakeholder interviews. And we will make that available to JPAC as soon as that is finalized. It'll be posted on the project's website. Throughout the engagement, we've really heard broad support for the overall approach and the objectives. There's some fine-tuning of the objectives and expansion of some of the thoughts expressed in the draft objectives, but that this work is really important in terms of getting done, that if there is a problem, we need to move forward, so there's support for doing the work, but really for the outcomes expressed in those draft objectives around focusing on outcomes, ensuring it's equitable, that it's multimodal, people-focused, striving for simplicity, but recognizing that it's likely we will need to use more than one measure or measures around this new policy, and also that it would be helpful in terms of thinking about how this would apply at the thruway system level versus arterials across the region, and recognizing that different parts of the region have different options available, different land use contexts, and that the policy be responsive to that, but also support our implementation of the 2040 growth concept, our climate smart strategy, our safety goals, and equity goals as well. So really trying to accomplish a lot in this work, so we have our work cut out for us. These are examples of the measures that had been identified. The measures on the left side of this column are the ones that have been raised through the scoping activities and the stakeholder interviews most prominently or most frequently, so I want to highlight that. But we will be looking at a whole range of measures. There's been a lot of work that ODOT has already done, other partners have done in the region that we'll use to create an inventory. But then we will be looking for JPAC and the Metro Council to really help give us direction on how to narrow and focus, because we want this to be something that we can manage and be able to analyze and evaluate, and we won't be able to evaluate all of the measures that have been identified in the field. So in your work plan, just at a really high level, the work in 2021 will be bringing you background research. So we are working in partnership with Portland State University, Dr. Jennifer Dill, and a graduate student to do some background research that we'll bring forward early in the year. Also bring back some of the RTP analysis, just to remind you of what we learned around not being able to meet the current policy, but really trying to illustrate how the current policy is being applied and used in those different use cases using real examples in the region. We also will be working to, if I skipped ahead, working to develop case studies to test new measures or revised measures in different places to, again, really try and bring it down to sort of ground it in current places in the region, to then, and also develop criteria for narrowing that inventory of measures that we attest and apply through case studies in the locations that are identified. In 2021, we'll use the results of what we learned from that analysis and findings to then begin shaping some recommendations around what the updated policy should be, what measures, how it would be applied in the region, as well as the actions needed to implement the policy in the future. Once there's a public review draft available of that, we would then have a formal comment period, an opportunity for the public and other stakeholders to provide feedback. We would refine it and then bring the recommendations forward for JPACT and Metro Council to consider for approval in the fall of 2021. We're proposing in the engagement strategy to rely on existing committees to the extent possible, largely that, but then also supplement that with some technical expert panels, workshops, some forums with community leaders, but also other practitioners in the region, and really looking at our regional technical and policy committees, as well as the coordinating committees, as primary ways in which to engage our local partners in this work, along with our more traditional website, public comment periods, and other mechanisms. This just highlights the decision-making process that I've described in terms of the technical and policy recommendations. And then going forward through the end of this year, TPAC, as I said, will be discussing the draft work plan that's in your packet today and making their recommendation to you. We'll bring that to you for your consideration at your November meeting. I will also be briefing the Metro Council in early November on the draft work plan, and then your recommendation will be brought forward to them for their consideration. This is our contact information, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or hear any feedback that you may have on our what we have in your packet.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So questions and comments. Commissioner Salvas.
Just a comment, and maybe perhaps Kim may want to. Kim and I have actually talked about this issue. I'm actually looking forward to the mobility study, and as we discussed this in the past, it was, you know, hopefully I'll be able to identify gaps in the system. And referencing on my earlier comments, is that there are there's very little mobility alternatives in a lot of Clackamas County in the urbanized part within the metro boundaries, which we represent. And I'm sure that's the case in parts of Washington County as well. So I gather the system completeness, that one page you had there, will there be some kind of a graphic emphasis on that to actually demonstrate to people where those gaps are and how incomplete the system is and where it is complete?
Yes, and so that'll be within the draft work plan in Task 3. We have bringing back to you where in the regional transportation plan we've documented that. So we have identified where there are gaps in the active transportation network, where there are gaps in the transit system in terms of the vision of what we've identified in the regional transportation plan. So we'll know where those gaps are in the region as part of this.
Yeah, I just want to just kind of emphasize, and I mean no disrespect to anyone around the table, but I just want to just say that if you look at the alternatives here in this part of the region, you all are the envy of all the alternatives you all have, the envy. And I think that my colleague to my right, which I have a lot of respect for, shortly after my comments, suggested perhaps that Happy Valley be part of the TriMet district. And I think it goes to show that we don't understand our other areas, and I think it would probably be a good exercise for all of us to understand what those areas are like outside of this area. And I understand areas about Portland and safety issues. I do travel through the areas. I listen. But Happy Valley actually is in the TriMet district, has been. And I believe virtually everything in Clackamas County within the metro boundaries is in the TriMet district or SMART or other agencies. The issue is is that it appears we don't have very much transit in Happy Valley at all, because there is very little transit in Happy Valley, and that's because of service, I would call the severely underserved areas. I'm hoping that this mobility standard or this exercise will demonstrate that.
Thank you. Mr. Kelsey, I know you have your Councilor Stacey, that is up first.
On the contrary, I've already talked to this. We want to hear you cough some more.
I just have one comment, just for your consideration. The one thing, when I look at the metrics here, I'd encourage us to think about a carbon mobility reduction metric.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my comments fall under system completeness and connectivity. As we begin studying staff analysis following work by the task force that's building a 2020 measure, we're looking at funding options, levels of match for regional investment to build additional elements of our region's transportation network through a measure that might go to the people in 2020. And I'm starting to see some disparities around the region. Portions of the region that lack connectivity in their arterial and collector network, it turns out, don't have resources to provide match. So there's a zero in columns for projects in certain parts of our region where neither the affected city nor county has such a fundamental thing as a system development charge for transportation investment. I know in my city, where I live, my county, all of my district is in Multnomah County and in the city of Portland, primarily the city. The city of Portland has pretty aggressive system development charges that include investment in streets, in transit, in active transportation. If we don't have that in all our urban areas, we're missing a vital tool. And I commend my colleague to my left, Commissioner Savas, for his adamant advocacy on behalf of folks who are underserved in Clackamas County. But you can't run a bus where there isn't an arterial. And if you don't have a system development charge to pay for a street, why are we complaining to TriMet about the bus?
Thank you. I have one question, and I don't expect to answer it, because I haven't considered this. So is there a possibility that at the optimal risk is that the state-owned facilities that are located in the boundary will have different standards, mobility standards, than the rest of the state?
They already do.
So the policy that's in place now was adopted in 2000 and amended into the Oregon Highway Plan in 2002 in Table 7, and that's just specific to the Portland region. Table 6 applies to the rest of the state.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so any other comments or questions? Thank you, everybody, for your attendance today. We are going to postpone the transportation major update. Thank you for being here today, Tyler, to the next meeting, and so we are able to finish on time. So thank you for being here, and we'll see you in November.